Back, I assume, quickly?
Yeah. He's going back.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and get going. Well, good evening. No one's here, but still welcome to the Planning Commission meeting for this evening, March 7th. And why don't we go ahead and start with introductions. It's nice to see a full board, lots of folks up here. Starting on our far left.
Spencer Stegman, North Kitsap.
Richard Chaddock, Central Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, Central.
Tom Nevins, North.
Aaron Murphy, North.
Kara Ann Gonzalez Harless, South Kitsap.
Gina Buskirk, Central Kitsap.
And Robert Baglio, South Kitsap. So, with the agenda before you, any need to do any modifications, or is there a motion for the adoption?
Move to the, to adopt the planned agenda.
I'll second that.
Assuming no discussion, all those in favor? Okay, unanimous. And we have the approval of the minutes. I assume we've had time to take a look at those. Do we have a motion for the adoption of the minutes?
I move approval.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. So, I guess next we go right into the training. I think you're up, Shelley. Are you feeling better?
I'm better, but I still have a cough, so I'm apologizing in advance. It's been kind of being triggered today. So, I'm here to give you some state-mandated training on basically on open meetings and public records and some general state laws on public officials. For the record, I'm Shelley Knipe. I'm with the prosecutor's office. But first, I wanted to go over a little bit. I wasn't able to attend last time, so some of this might be repeated. But I wanted to go over a little bit. I guess I have to start there. Okay. A little bit over the structure of the Planning Commission. Planning Commission is established by a state statute, the Planning Enabling Act, that was adopted in the 50s, 3670. The GMA is 3670A. And it sets up, thinking all I have to do is click this, but I have to look at the screen. It sets up the structure for various planning commissions and planning agencies for counties. And it provides for different types of structures. In Kitsap County, we've chosen the one that has a planning department and a commission. So DCD is the planning department, and you are the planning commission. And under the statute, the department is called the planning agency. And the role of the planning commission under the statute is to conduct hearings as are required, make findings and conclusions, and then they're transmitted to the department, which then transmits them to the Board of Commissioners. And that's also codified in the Kitsap County Code. So in essence, DCD prepares a comprehensive plan. We'll use that since that's what most of my work involves. And the Board of Commissioners can also initiate changes, and then they go through you for public hearings and recommendations. And then DCD takes your recommendations back to the board. When you vote to approve a comprehensive plan, it has to be by a majority vote of all the members. So if there is just a quorum, you know, if there's five people here and four vote, then that won't pass it. When you have a full nine-member contingent, there can be changes by the Board of Commissioners, but subject to, again, certain notice and comment procedures. Any changes after it comes from the Planning Commission to the Board of Commissioners has to be within the scope of what the initial notice was and the CEPA review. So So if there was an EIS, it had to be within the scope of the alternatives. In that, if they meet that, then you're done and the board can move on. If not, then the board has to send things back. So a little bit about findings of fact. They should be based on the evidence presented to you. They should be something in the record or a reasonable inference of the record. I can't stress how important the record is when it comes to an appeal. We want as much in the record as possible. And the record is what is the basis for all the land use decisions. So if it's a disputed fact, then it's your role to weigh the evidence and make a finding based on the disputed facts. And it shouldn't be a personal opinion, and it shouldn't be something just a conclusion. Then the conclusions of law are the reasoning for the recommendation based on the facts and the law applied to those facts. And again, based solely on the record. And they should be decisive and conclusive. Okay, now that's it for Planning Commission. I'm going to go into the public meetings, mainly public meetings, because that applies to the Planning Commission specifically. So you just need to always be aware that everything you do as a Planning Commission is a public action. And all your meetings should be open to the public. And all your records are open to the public, subject to public disclosure and record retention laws. And that you should always be acting neutrally with impartiality. The Open Public Meetings Act is the law that is called one of the Sunshine Laws. And it's the law that requires all public agencies meetings, not every agency, but all governing bodies. But it also specifically says planning commissions in the statute that are to be open and transparent. So what is a meeting? A meeting is under the statute one where action is taken. And what is action under the statute? The transaction of business. And as you can see, it's quite broad, not just limited to public testimony, but discussions, deliberations, anything dealing with the business of the Planning Commission. Final action is also defined in the Act, but it really doesn't apply to anything you do. It's more dealing with executive sessions. Although your final recommendations would probably, and votes would be final actions. So in order to take action, obviously you have to have a quorum. If there's less than a quorum, and you know, if there's three or four of you meeting at someone's house, you can't take action. You don't have to worry about the public meetings law. The problem with the county is the commissioners, two of them make a quorum. So that creates problems with the commissioners, but a nine-member body, it's easier to deal with. So once you have a quorum present, any action, including discussion, must comply with the OPMA, the Open Public Meetings Act. Open to the public, you have to have proper notice, and you always have to have minutes of the meetings. So there's two types of meetings. There's regular meetings, and those are ones that are regularly scheduled through a resolution, bylaw, some kind of set meeting schedule once a year done on the record. And then there's special meetings. Once the regular meetings are done, they don't need any more notice once they're slated by resolution or otherwise. Special meetings, on the other hand, have to have particular notice. They're restricted to the business that was specified in that notice. So if you're going to have a special meeting to talk about a comp plan amendment, You can't go into a zoning amendment if it wasn't noticed. And there's more recent requirements for posting on the building and on online for special meetings. The problem with open meetings is that you have to be careful not to have an inadvertent meeting, like I said, with the commissioners. And the courts have ruled that electronic mail communications could be a meeting. When you get into a discussion where there's a quorum present, the Battleground School District got into big trouble over a series of emails between the board members. And that's why part of the instructions to you are always to communicate with the clerk and don't get into dialogues with each other, because we don't want to have a violation of the Open Meetings Act. There are social events. You can all get together at a social event, just don't talk business, and you're fine. It's hard to do, I'm sure. Telephonic participation is allowed. And again, you just have to make sure that it's open and transparent so that anyone in the audience can hear the person on the telephone, and they can hear, especially if it's a hearing where you have testimony. But you should, again, be careful about the use of telephone trees and any kind of polling or discussion through something like that. A quorum may attend another organization's meeting, so a quorum of the Planning Commission could go to a Board of Commissioners meeting. Again, just no action taken. And you frequently have joint Planning Commission Board of Commissioner meetings, but in those cases, you're acting as the Planning Commission and you're following your process. The chair of the Planning Commission opens the hearing and does it jointly with the chair of the Board of Commissioners. So closed study sessions, retreats, or executive sessions, generally not allowed. And now, with the exception of that, is if there's less than a quorum, but they need to be open and advertised if you're having a study session. No secret ballots or polling of anyone outside of the meeting process. So if one member calls the other, how are you going to vote, and ends up calling everybody, how are you going to vote, that won't work either. Might be hard to get caught, but that's a violation. So again, the exceptions to the open meeting are no quorum, no action, individual distribution and review of materials, that's not a meeting. Executive sessions are exempt from the Open Meetings Act, but I could think of no occasion where the Planning Commission would hold an executive session. They're very limited by law on what the topics are: personnel issues, litigation, potential litigation, security risks, things like that. And there aren't anything that the Planning Commission would really take any kind of action on. So I know last year we had a little bit of confusion about whether or not the Planning Commission can go into executive session. And I really don't think that there's any topic that you would take up that would meet one of those exceptions. And that's where, in the executive sessions, for instance, if it's litigation and the Board of Commissioners is settling a case, they can approve the settlement in an executive session, but they really have to take final action in open meeting. And there was a land use settlement in Spokane that was undone because they never took action in the open meeting. And it was a subsequent city council that wanted to undo this settlement, and they were able to. And then there was a malpractice suit after that. So it was very interesting. But it's the strictness of the open public meetings. It shows the strictness and the executive session. So public hearings versus public meetings, I know a lot, most of you know this. Both of them require compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act. Public hearing is where testimony is taken, the public is heard. You are within your rights to limit testimony, time, subject, you know, however you want to do it to keep an orderly meeting. Then we get into the legislative role. So I think I have a slide out of order here. So the Planning Commission deals mainly with legislative actions. Your recommendations on the comp plan, on code changes, things like that. That's all legislative. When planning commissions were first authorized by statute, they added the hearing examiners later, and a lot of planning commissions, and some in some counties still do, act on permits. That is quasi-judicial. And in the quasi-judicial realm, you have to be much more careful, much more like a judge, to make sure that there is no appearance of fairness, and we'll get into all of that. The only thing you deal that is with that is purely quasi-judicial are current use assessments. And this is a slide I just realized I had out of order. So on the conduct of the meetings, they have to be open to the public. You can limit testimony. You cannot require people to register and put their names down, which a lot of people don't know, realize, because you usually have a sign-up sheet, and that's for having an orderly meeting. But you should always ask if there's anyone else who wants to speak, because people can't be required to put their names down. And you can have someone disrupting a meeting removed, and you can adjourn the meeting if it gets too wild, if you cannot have an orderly meeting. And I've seen some in my years, not here, on the other side of the water, where people get very emotional about land use issues. If it is adjourned and the public is kept out, the media have to be allowed in. But that's going to be very, very rare.
So, on a quick point there, if we ask for testimony, and usually we ask the person to identify themselves and kind of state where they're from, can they say they want to be anonymous on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they can. Okay. You know, it helps for the record. It's not going to help them that much if they're arguing their case. If we're on an appeal and we say some anonymous person said this, it's got a lot more gravity. And that's when you come into your weighing of the evidence, when someone, you know, is going to tell you their name and why they feel that way. But there is a provision in the Open Public Meetings Act that we cannot require people to register and sign up or anything. That comes up in the Public Records Act too, because we often have sign-in sheets with addresses and phone numbers, and those are subject to public disclosure. And we've struggled with that at times, but I'll get to that. So anyway, in adjourning, if adjourning means just stopping the meeting and then continuing it, we usually call it continuing the hearing to another date and time. But if for any reason the meeting has to be adjourned and you want to pick it back up, often you just adjourn and pick up at your next regularly scheduled meeting. But if you want to have a special meeting, you have to go through these steps. Okay. So violations, the main issue with a violation of the Open Meetings Act is the action can be void. And that, like that settlement agreement I was talking about. There is a $100 civil penalty on participants who knowingly violate. And that, I've never seen a case on that. There can be injunction mandamus on the action and attorney's fees. Oh, This is really weird. I must have skipped through. The quasi-judicial and the legislative. I'm somehow don't have a slide in here that was on my version that I looked at before I came here. As I mentioned, the current use quasi-judicial deals with a specific parcel and specific parties. And it's, I know where it is. It's in the appearance of fairness. So I'm out of order. My cold is kicking in. And in those cases, there are very few that come before you, but the current use assessments are one. And then the site specifics on the comp plans meet the judicial definition of a quasi-judicial action, but they don't meet the statutory definition because they're considered legislative. But and I'll get to that under the Appearance of Fairness Act. But it's something you need to know about and be aware of when you have those in front of you. So I'm going to skip over public records pretty fast because hopefully you won't have to deal with it. Because as far as I know, DCD handles all your records. So you all have county email addresses, right? And that's what you should be using for your own protection. Because if someone did a public records request of your emails, you don't want us to have to go through your personal computer and all your personal emails. So public records are subject to disclosure and retention. A public record is, again, a very, very broad definition. Any writing relating to the conduct of government, prepared, owned, used, retained, regardless of physical form. And the statute for the public records is RCW 4256. And a writing, again, very, very broad, has everything in it, including now metadata. So there was a case, I think it was the city of Shoreline, where I think it was a city manager emailed, took a work email, sent it to her home computer, and then sent it back. And the court ordered her home computer to be inspected for metadata connected with the transfer of that email. So to meet the Public Records Act, it has to be a writing, broadly defined, relate to the conduct of government, prepared, owned, or used by the agency, includes data, and it includes records of contractors. So if the county hired a consultant to do work, his records for that project would be considered public records. And of course, there's a case on that. There are lots and lots of cases on the Public Records Act. It's become a gold mine. I think it was the city of Snohomish or Index that almost disincorporated because they couldn't pay their public records fines. The statute is liberally construed by the courts, and so our advice is always err on the side of disclosing the record. There are numerous exemptions, but they're strictly construed. So for your purposes, your personal notes, that are used to refresh your memory, those would not be considered public records. Certain telephone messages and calendars, although we have had requests for commissioners' calendars, and we usually give them. So there are strict timelines. If we get a public records request, we have 5 days to respond, not to supply the records, but for an initial response. Anything we retain or do not disclose or redact, we have to create a log explaining what we redacted and why, and give a statutory reason, you know, a short explanation, and a statutory citation. It's a lot of work. We generally can't ask a person requesting a record why they want them, but There is a provision that we don't have to provide lists for commercial purposes. And every so often, someone from another state will say, hey, I'm compiling a list for my business. Can you give me all the properties that have such and such? I say, no. And cite to that statute. So unlike the Open Meetings Act, noncompliance with the Public Records Act is very, very costly. It's strict liability. Even inadvertent non-disclosure, the county will be liable. The daily penalties range, I think they start at $10. And the Supreme Court last year on an LNI case said per page. And they had about a four-month delay, and I think it was a $300,000 fine. So, and it was a case that was under investigation. And then, of course, there's attorney's fees in addition to the penalties. And like I said, it's strict liability. And there's cases where even there's a provision that a third party who the record's about can seek an injunction not to have that record disclosed. But if they don't win, then we still have to pay the penalties if it was an unreasonable delay. And that's what happened in that LNI case. It's about a gang club. So we have record retention laws, and the state archivist sets a schedule for different types of records. And again, it shouldn't be anything that you have to worry about, because DCD does all that for you. The typical retention, the default retention is 6 years for most things, but some things like building permits are permanent, perpetual. But we get to turn certain intervals, we can turn it over to the state archivist and they deal with it from there.
So you'd mentioned, you know, things like personal notes. So if I'm taking notes during a meeting, do I need to keep 6 years worth of my binders for this?
No, okay. Because they aren't considered public records. Okay. Yeah. If they're sole only used for you to refresh your memory. If there's something that you're going to pass around to everyone, then it would be, and it would be something you'd give to the clerk and show, retain it for you. Well, I'm not coughing as much, but I am losing my voice. Even if there's a short retention, say a year, and we retain it for 5 years, if we get a public records request, we have to disclose it. And once we get a public records request, then we can't destroy those records. Even if it gets withdrawn or fulfilled, we have to hold it for at least another year. So again, DCD does most of this for you, and you should ensure that the clerk has all that you need, anything that you're using for official business, so that we can meet the law. Okay, and again, it's important on having a record and defending the county's actions on the cases that you deal with. And again, take care with your home computers. I can't urge you enough to use your county email address, because you just don't want some forensic computer guy coming into your house. So now we're going to get to the appearance of fairness and the quasi-judicial. The appearance of fairness doctrine says that your actions must not actually be fair, not only actually be fair, but they must appear fair. And it was a judicial doctrine that really came through the case law, mostly in land use proceedings. And it was pretty strict there for a while. I don't know the year. I should have looked this up. Eventually the legislature put it in a statute and limited its application, and states in that statute that the appearance of fairness doctrine only applies to quasi-judicial land use actions, and not to legislative actions. Again, quasi-judicial is the specific rights of specific parties and specific property. And believe it or not, there's a lot of case law on this, because in the 70s and 80s, that's how you got a land use decision undone. So the statute talks about comprehensive plans, area-wide zoning, and zoning amendments of area-wide significance. None of those are subject to the appearance of fairness doctrine. But again, if you look at the judicial definition of what's quasi-judicial, or site-specific comp plan amendments meet that definition. So we just say to take care, try not to talk to the proponent if you don't have to, and just treat it a little more judicially than you would any other amendment.
Kelly, this is actually coming up because we're being asked to look at our procedures, and one of the procedures we're being asked to adopt provides that we're required to vote. So in the area of site-specific matters, I may have consulted with the person who's here, and I need to be able to recuse myself.
Okay, I'm going to get to that. So, you need to be careful with ex parte context, which is talking to people outside of the meeting or the hearing, but only if you're challenged. So it's a personal decision for you to recuse yourself if you have a conflict. And as a lawyer, you may feel a little bit stronger about conflicts, and because we have them all the time in practicing law. But the statute provides a way to deal with that. And if there's something that's borderline, you talked to somebody 3 years ago about it, but you didn't actually work for them, or you're just not sure whether it would fit into it, then you place it on the record in the statute, or the appearance of one. You state on the record, I've had this contact with such and such, or my firm did work for this guy's brother, or whatever. And then if it's not challenged, it's considered waived. And they did that deliberately, because there's a case out of Bellevue, a BRB case, where the court said you can't sit back and wait for the decision and then decide to object. When the member put on the record that there is this issue, does anybody have a problem with it? But if you do recuse yourself, you have to leave the room. And that's from a case out of Port Townsend. A planning commission member, it was a planning commissioner, his bank represented the applicant, and I think they were dealing with the land use permit. And he got down off the dais and came over and testified in favor of the application. He didn't vote on it, but the court said no, he should have, they found a violation, said he should have left, because they felt that, his presence probably swayed the other planning commission members too much. But the statute does take care of that. So if you're uncomfortable with it and you place it on the record and no one challenges you, you're fine. And they cannot challenge you later.
Question? Mm-hmm. If you wanted to give public testimony, are you allowed to step down and or is that something you're not supposed to do?
On a legislative matter, you can. On a quasi-judicial, I would find someone else to do it for you because of this Port Townsend case. It probably, given the backing up of the courts and the legislature on this doctrine over the years, it may not be fatal now, but we have this 1977 case that says you should leave the room. And we probably just wouldn't want to risk it going to court over it again. So I don't know, in your profession, you may have situations where you do represent someone. But I think you just need to be careful with their things coming before the Planning Commission. And again, the site specifics are really questionable. They probably would be upheld as a legislative act because they're part of the comp plan amendment. And the statute says comp plan amendments are not subject to this doctrine. But it hasn't been tested in court. Once we get a court decision that says, no, they're fine, then you're good to go. But that hasn't happened.
Okay.
Okay, so almost done. There are statutes on code of ethics for municipal officers, and you guys are considered municipal officers because you're appointed. But very few are going to really apply. The general rule is you can't use your position as a planning commissioner for a personal benefit. Public trust, held to a standard good behavior, blah, blah, blah. Sorry. Trying to save my voice. So this one wouldn't really apply because you don't really supervise anybody. You cannot accept any compensation, gratuity, or reward for your actions. No, you can't use your role to secure special privileges or exemptions for yourself. Anything related, that one seems to be a repeat. Cannot disclose confidential information. That probably won't happen since you don't have executive sessions. You can't accept employment that requires confidential information. And then Smith versus Centralia, I think, is a land use case. I might be getting it mixed up with another Smith case, but where the court said you shouldn't be judging your own case. And then there's also a doctrine of incompatible offices, and there's a whole body of case law on that where, for instance, let me think of an example. If you were a officer of a city and a county at the same time, certain positions might be incompatible because you can't really make an objective decision without impacting your other office. But it's unlikely to occur, as a planning commissioner. We want to get along with our cities. So that's it. And then at the very end, and I think you all have copies, I have some references to the statute and the code.
Questions? Make sure it's a short answer. Voice is going.
Oh, God.
Well, okay.
And now
you're
all legal because I think it was about 3 years ago, the legislature adopted a statute that all elected officials, appointed officials, department directors have to have training on open meetings and open records. So you're good to go.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Yes. Let's see, next item on the agenda. Public hearing deliberations for the rules of procedure. Is that you, Scott?
That is me.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and close this down. Okay. Should pick it up. You knocked it down. I've got one. Good evening, commissioners. I'm here to help with the deliberation and the discussion of deliberation and hope their recommendation to the department tonight on planning commission rules of procedure. You have before you an amended staff report. It's really not all that different from what you got at work study, except for the very last page shows comments that were provided by Tom Nevins in an email. And I don't know if those were talked about at work study.
I knew it.
Briefly, they were briefly discussed at work study. These are the only comments that we got on this matter. So with that, I can go into a discussion, or I can help lead a discussion about Tom's comments, if you'd like.
I guess why don't you go ahead and lead a discussion, maybe go through these a little bit, and then we'll see if you have any questions.
So, and some of this may be clarified a little bit by tonight's training, as well as the training we received previously. So I think Tom's first comment is that members shall indicate any special interest they may have on a matter before them. As we've learned tonight, that's not a requirement for legislative matters. It is for quasi-judicial matters, but the Planning Commission is not generally hearing quasi-judicial matters.
It just that it falls under the appearance of fairness problem, and that's why I'm thinking that it would be good to have this out there, given that we have new members coming through from time to time that don't get the training on day one, and we may have a problem. I'm sure that we can probably deal with it, but there's a lot of stuff in our on our what are we calling this, the in the document we're considering,
okay,
that are they're we probably adhere to them anyway. Opening meetings, have meetings on time, and all that sort of thing. But this particular thing, I think, I just put it out there because my feeling is it needs a little reinforcement. I know at least one of our members was a little bit confused on this issue. But I have been here in a situation where we had a commissioner who wanted certain changes to the comprehensive plan, who had a personal interest in having the boundary extended a certain distance out, and it was called, and he eventually ended up testifying for the extension, which was not challenged by the courts, but directly for his participation, but eventually the whole concept that we were operating under was challenged, and it was overturned and remanded. So I'm just looking at an efficiency of product that if we have something in front of us that reminds us that we need to be careful of appearance of fairness, that might be helpful.
So I guess, are you recommending additional information be inserted into this document?
Yes. In fact, I can put it in the form of a motion, and we can up and down it and see where we go with that. And that I have written a different one, but this one that's written here, and item one will probably do the job. I'm moving that item number one on the comments, my comments, be incorporated into the document in the location that I have suggested, unless otherwise.
Mr. Chair, point of order.
Yes.
I think you need to lead with a main motion for the entire set of rules.
That's true.
And then
you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Follow with
you're
the
right.
Amendment.
Okay, I'll do that. I will move that the Planning Commission adopt the entire set of rules, the new, what are we calling this, the amended rules to the procedures for the Planning Commission.
Okay. Second.
That's the motion on the floor. That's the motion, but it hasn't been seconded.
No, it was just seconded. So now we can get into discussion. The second came from?
Okay.
So discussion on the amended staff report and rules of procedure.
And I think now is the time then that the motion for the additional pieces be considered. And I am moving that we consider issue number one on the in the comment sheet in the back.
Well, so now aren't you actually amending your first motion?
That's right.
So you have to, don't you have to
right.
make a motion to amend that? I know, but you have to make a motion to amend that. It has to be seconded, correct?
Have to do the, yes, that's right. Everything has to be seconded.
Right.
Everything has to be voted
right.
on.
So you need to make a motion, state this into a motion, correct?
Say that again, please.
You're proposing to amend
oh, yes.
the amendments.
Right.
Right? So I'm just saying you now need to go ahead, I believe, make a motion to amend your initial motion, correct?
So let's just hit the reset. So I think tonight there should have been some discussion and then a closing of that and then the beginning of the deliberation by the Planning Commission where we would have entertained the initial motion and to approve the entire set of rules. And then, Tom, you didn't have a motion to amend. You can create any – I think you said you had revised language to this as well. You can lead with that as your original amendment.
And Ken, just for the record, it's attachment C. We keep calling it the notes in the back. So for the record,
yes.
It's attachment C that we're talking about.
Last, very last page.
And I guess, once again, point of order, you're right. We kind of jumped the gun here. We're supposed to be having a public hearing.
Right.
So perhaps you should go through this. And okay. Tom, I understand you're eager and anxious. But perhaps we should get the rundown on this. Open the public hearing, even though no one's here. Close the public hearing, and then go into deliberation. So with that being the case, I guess maybe we should officially retract the motions or withdraw the motions, perhaps?
Yeah, let's just...
Since Shelley's here, let's make sure we do this properly. So...
Okay. All right, let's start over.
Okay.
Okay, so for the record, I'm Scott Diener. I'm the Manager of Development Services and Engineering. I helped prepare the document that you have in front of you. It's a revised or amended staff report for the Planning Commission. The only change to the document from what you received earlier is attachment C, the very last page, which has Tom Nevin's original comments that were provided to the department on at the end of January. What else you have in front of you is the resolution that the board would consider for its adoption, as well as the actual rules, draft set of rules in front of you. And the rules are sort of the standard fare of the purpose of the Planning Commission, how often they meet, and the location of those meetings, the officers, the staff, and the duties associated with the Planning Commission. So that includes a discussion of the chair, the vice chair, secretary, clerk. Then there's a section on the conduct of meetings and hearings. There is a discussion of reconsideration and when reconsideration can be considered. And there is Section 8, which also calls for recommended amendments to rules and procedures. So if you are using the rules and you find later that you would like to adjust the rules, there's a process for that. And then there's a section on meeting rules and procedures, as well as a closing section on the ground rules, which we will make sure is available to the public when they come for hearings in the future. We used to have a big whiteboard that had the ground rules available for the public to see, so we'll reinvigorate that for their use. And I think that's generally it. Now, I do understand that this was discussed at work study a while ago. So, do you have any questions? For
me? The rules of procedure was discussed at work study?
Yeah.
The rules of procedure were not walked through in detail. They were provided to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
And there was some
comment related to Commissioner Nevin's submittals.
Okay.
So, Mr. Shattuck, I think you had a comment.
I just had a question in the public hearing thing. Can someone help me again what the purpose of the provision Q is in terms of mandatory voting, giving issues involving ethical considerations, appearance of fairness, although they may not apply to all circumstances. I think we're all better off in being open, and if there is a conflict of interest, saying I shouldn't be voting on this, mm-hmm. As opposed to saying, no, you must vote. If you don't vote, it's no. And so can someone help me understand why that's an important aspect of these rules?
I'm not sure I followed your question entirely, at least at the very beginning of it. Could you restate the question for me?
Sure. There's portion Q in the procedure that requires every commissioner to vote on every issue.
Portion Q.
There's Q Q.
You have a page?
Section 9.
7 of 8.
Section 8, or I'm sorry, Section 9,
oh, okay.
Q.
All right, thank you.
There's voting is obligatory. Every commissioner must vote. There's no clear basis on which to recuse yourself unless that's allowed under the bylaws, and I can't find anywhere it is. Or you ask all the commissioners, can I recuse myself? And they say yes. Example, if I have, again, consulted with someone regarding a site-specific request, I may not be at liberty to discuss here what those conversations were, but I don't think it'd be appropriate for me to vote on that issue. And I would say, geez, I need to recuse myself. I'll leave the room. I think Shelley's idea is a good one. Or another example, I've got a site-specific request, and it's a limited liability company, and I'm a 20% holder of an interest in that particular piece of property. I'm not comfortable voting on that matter, and I'm not sure why Q is there. What is the purpose of making me vote in those circumstances?
Okay. I'll take a stab at it, and then if any of my peers want to help out, they can do so. So I think there is an expectation on behalf of the public that members of the Planning Commission will vote and have an obligation to vote. And so I think that this is trying to convey that obligation to vote, except in certain circumstances. And those circumstances include when there's a conflict of interest. Go ahead.
It doesn't say that. There's no provision in there for a conflict of interest as a basis for recusal.
Okay.
Well, as I read it, it's saying that unless the majority of the other members present excuse the commission,
right,
which is now saying that we have to vote on your
conflict of interest,
which, according to the training we just had, you can state your conflict, and if no one objects to it, you're allowed to vote on it.
I may be allowed in this forum. I'm not comfortable within my profession. And so I guess with this rule, I'm happy to discuss it. I just don't see a key purpose for it. I would think the public's expectation would be more importantly for you to say I have a conflict, I shouldn't be voting here, than for me to simply vote. I think the public's expectation is better served by my meeting an appearance of fairness type arrangements for my ethical obligation as opposed to voting.
So, Gina Buskirk, for the record. So, if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is you think that we should be allowed to vote yes or no. We should be able to recuse ourselves. Or I know there's mention about whether or not we should abstain. I can see reasons why you might abstain from something as simple as approving minutes because you weren't present at the last meeting. So, you're indicating you would like to know and have it confirmed through the rules that we have four options. But they must be based in,
I think that's
or grounded
good,
in.
That's a good summary.
Okay.
It would seem to me that you would know ahead of time whether or not there was a conflict or there was something coming forward that you were uncomfortable voting on, and then you could, would seem like you, in that case, could recuse yourself. No?
I don't think there's anything in the rule that allows that.
Well, maybe if we put this
right. I guess what I'm doing, I'm arguing for your amendment.
Okay.
And there are times when you might not know it until you actually see the person standing in front of you, or that person. It could even happen, especially with your work, where they testify to something that makes you go, "Wait a minute, they consulted with me. I recall this now." That happens. The longer you practice, the more that can happen that way.
So you have an example of where you might be wanting to recuse yourself, but your peers may not allow that.
Or I'm uncomfortable discussing the basis of the conflict, or I'm uncomfortable asking my peers to vote on whether my conflict's adequate or not.
Well, in one point here, right now the way it's written, if you're not excused by the majority of the members, your vote, if you don't vote, you're a no.
That's correct.
And I don't understand why it can't just be neutral, abstain.
An abstention.
Abstention.
Well, I guess the thing is, you know, this. I believe this is probably more of deliberation. We've asked a question. Now, if we want to modify this particular provision, we can do that during our deliberation process.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
But thought we were.
And again, so the question through the public hearing is, help me understand the reason for this provision. And the only what I've heard is there's a public expectation. I'll vote on everything.
Right. I think that's the underlying reason for the wording in that section.
Did you have a comment, Jim? Look at
no. I mean, I was just going to add that same thing. I think the expectation that you're going to be participating in the commission's business is kind of the front side of this this particular provision, but it's certainly something that could be modified through your deliberations.
Okay, Karen.
Do you have an example of where this has been a problem in the past? I mean, I don't understand where it comes into play.
But probably the state legislative house, but they just don't vote because they don't want to state their position on a particular case. I'm just kidding anyway.
I don't have an example right. of where it's been a problem in the past.
Many councils have their own rules on this whole thing. And I know it varies all over the place. I looked at a couple, one from Paulsboro, one from Issaquah, and I think one from Bremerton, and they don't all agree. I mean, sometimes a no vote is considered agreeing to the premise and saying it's a yes vote, and some say it's a no vote. So it's a strange little beast.
It does seem like a scenario that may not present itself very often, where you're telling your peers that you are not comfortable voting on an issue. I would suspect that in that situation, they would respect that statement and then recuse you. Or if they were to persist in understanding why, and you said, I'm not comfortable explaining why, I think that would be grounds for recusal as well.
But I don't think it is under the rules. It's a no vote. If they don't say they agree with me, then my vote is no.
I think one is a recusal and one is simply not voting. So if you simply refuse to vote, that's categorized as a no vote. The other is a recusal or an abstention.
I
think what the question is whether this provision here, I guess, eliminates the ability to recuse yourself, correct? Because that's what you're saying. And so that's really the question. If item Q indicates that you can't recuse yourself because of the obligation to vote, and I'm not sure that that's what it says, but there's no other provision in here that indicates otherwise.
Or definitions of one versus the other, right? Because I could say I did not refuse to vote. I recused myself. That's not the same thing.
Okay.
So what is definition of abstention?
Yeah,
I mean, we abstain all the time if
that.
You haven't attended the meeting,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going to vote on the minutes of the meeting.
Man.
So that.
Well, remember, all we're doing is getting a briefing at this point.
Right.
So we're just asking questions.
Right.
So did you want to clarify something or ask a question?
Well, I was going to propose language. I can wait and do that when the full discussion is done.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, I have a question as far as the amended staff report. The amended staff report, does this actually include the comments from Tom Nevins? Is that the amendment to the staff report?
Yes. That's the only change to the staff report.
So I guess this is one item. This has come up a couple of times, and not to beat up on Tom, but, you know, Tom tends to meet with staff, and then staff takes Tom's comments and includes them in something like this already as an amendment. To me, if Tom has some comments, I understand I have no problem meeting with staff, but they should not immediately go in here as an amendment. If Tom wanted to come to the meeting and present this as an amendment, that's fine. But, you know, it's kind of like I feel during, and I think with the stormwater, you brought some questions up as yeah. well, and they kind of get immediately included as being accepted. And I guess I just want to make sure that Tom being on the board is not giving him a special ability to affect staff. He still has to go through the process here. And I guess I've seen this kind of happen a couple times, and I guess I'd like to make sure that we have, because if all of a sudden I sit down with you and say, hey, you know what, I'd like to change this and this and this, and all of a sudden they're incorporated here, to me it's something I should present to the entire board and have them discuss it before it becomes part of a staff report.
I completely agree with
that. So I guess I just want to make sure that we should probably chat about how best to address this, because it's happened a couple times. You know, you're obviously trying to get more information and share your experience, but I want to make sure it's being dealt with properly.
I would like to explain how this came about. First of all, what I noticed online, the Board of County Commissioners post their agenda of what's going on. And there was an attachment in there from the Department of Community Development that they were going to be giving a briefing to the board. And it included several items. Among them was this packet. And I looked at that and I said, okay, it looks to me like the Board of County Commissioners is going to adopt a bit of the procedures without bringing him to the Planning Commission. Okay, well, they can do that if they want, but I think I will have my input. So I wrote an email to my North Kitsap commissioner and said, you know, here are some ideas. I forget what the email said, but it was, here are some ideas that we might want to consider. Rob Gelder then sent that down to DCD and said something like, these may have some merit, something like that. And that's how this whole thing has rolled out. I will not try to go around sneaking around. I'd be as open as I possibly can, probably more open than you would like.
Well, no, and like I said, I just know that there were some other discussions, like I said, on stormwater and you know, so I just want to make sure we're handling it properly.
Yeah, so
I'm not being accusatory at all. I just, you know, let's just make sure if we have some issues that we want to discuss, you know, because of our position, we shouldn't be able to necessarily have undue influence. Either we need to submit it to staff as just a general public comment, or we need to present it here at the meeting. And that's my only point that I was making.
And given the timing on some of these things and not sure what the process is going to be, when I saw something like that come forward, I thought I'd better get my oar in the water or I'm not in the boat at all.
But
that's all right.
Well, Jim had a hand up. Go ahead, Jim.
That's correct. Yeah, I think I probably could have done a better job with the explanation of attachment C and had called that out as comments received. That was really the intent of that.
Okay, and that's why I was asked for the clarification, because this says amended staff report. That's what I was saying. If the amended staff report actually is taking Mr. Nevin's comments lock, stock, and barrel and saying, hey, this is now part of it. That's why I was trying to ask for that clarification. Yeah.
And I think there probably was some confusion with how this was first run out. The idea was that we were going to talk to the board and let them know that this was happening, not that they were actually going to review a draft set of rules. So there was some initial confusion, which I think prompted her.
And it's sometimes it's stated that way when the documents come before the Board of County Commissioners. But in this particular case, I think there were three other items, and this was just presented without any explanation or there was no indication to me what the county commissioners were going to do with that.
Right. Yeah. So ultimately it was not presented to the board officially. Okay. We will do a better job to make sure we call out these kinds of documents as comments received or testimony received.
So I guess just to clarify, the comments by Tom Nevins submitted 131.17. These are just really then for our information to go ahead and discuss while we're here.
Yeah.
That's not actually a part of the staff report.
It's only a part of the staff report insofar as it's showing what comments we've received to date. Okay. That's it. And we'll do a better job calling that out specifically in the future.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll shall we open the public hearing? If you would, there's a sign-up sheet in back. And
I'm not 3 minutes.
Okay. We'll open the public hearing.
Okay. That means I can run down.
Yes. Receiving no input, we're now closing the public hearing. And I guess we'll enter directly into deliberations.
So now are we waiting on a motion to adopt the...
Yes, now we can go ahead and make okay. the...
I move that we adopt the proposed amendments to our stat on the staff report for the Planning Commission rules.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Discussion.
Yes, I would like to propose an amendment to the motion.
Is there a second?
I don't know.
I guess you should probably.
I haven't stated what it is yet.
We already know.
I'm going to propose it a little differently because I have some other language here. It might even be better. I'm not sure. But I am proposing the amendment read that members shall indicate at the earliest possible time any financial or other personal interest or relationships that they may have in a site-specific or quasi-judicial recommendation before the Planning Commission. Recusal from deliberation and voting is required if such involvement might affect the judgment in reaching a decision. And I have in parentheses, this may be inserted in to 9, meetings, rules, and procedures, Q, voting obligatory.
I guess, is there a second? Okay, now discussion. Go ahead, Aaron.
My discussion point would be really a question to Mr. Diener. Is the document in front of us without Mr. Nevin's comments 90% the same as every other planning commission in the state and serving its purpose as written and drawn from RCW as a general rule?
I would say that's probably generally accurate, whether it's 90% or 85%. I think it's generally reflective of many of the planning commissions that exist in Washington, if not.
And seem to function and hold up in a court system.
Right. In fact, this was put together through an approach of looking at several other jurisdictions.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess. Can I'm just trying to sort through, you're talking about, because I had some language that I was looking at for 9Q as well. So you just read something completely different, is that correct, than what was on the attachment? Mm-hmm. Or you...
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to have to hear that again.
She's asking you to reread your edited version.
You want to put that on the board?
Sure.
And I guess to clarify, this replaces Q in its entirety, or this is in addition?
No,
Q?
Just in addition. We can mess with Q if you want to. But.
Oh, you took it right now. Okay.
In terms of this discussion, I was.
Certainly didn't have any requirement for voting to the extent there was a conflict of interest. And so I appreciate Scott saying this is similar to everything that's done. I'm aware of no other, Tom, you've done research, no other requirement for voting in any planning commissions I've dealt with.
And I'm not sure about planning commissions, but it certainly is available and city councils and that sort of thing.
I would also point out that if a member is not going to vote on issues and is blatantly not going to participate, that goes to the county commissioner that appointed them, you know, their district to handle that situation. I don't see why we're putting an onus on, you know, we're going to make that person go one way or the other. So I'm really thinking that to say that you will have to vote is not a real requirement here.
Jim, looks like you want to raise your hand. Yeah, okay.
I think what we're talking about here is recusal if there's a conflict. Now, I think Tom may be the only sitting planning commissioner who was on the commission when there was a rather egregious conflict of interest situation that I was not on the commission, but I'm aware of, where a professional realtor participated in the site-specific comp plan amendment process in a way that profited himself and his client. And I think that's what Tom is trying to address here. And it was a pretty flagrant situation, from what I understand. Maybe Tom can elaborate a little bit, but I think that's what you're trying to address.
Well, generally, this document is the document that guides our process, and our process leads to our product. And so I am only interested in seeing us improve the process and the product. It's your set of rules, and you get to choose what you're going to do with it. But I think that there's a fair amount of confusion on this appearance of fairness doctrine, and I understand in the heat of battle sometimes people get real excited about making sure they really do believe that that property of theirs should be involved in the urban growth area, for instance, and oh yes, in fact I might just generally profit from it, but that doesn't affect my judgment. I just think my basic judgment is that this property should be in. So I don't cast aspersions on anyone. I just think that it would open up, if we don't keep this in constantly in front of us, we could open up a conflict of interest that could challenge our work and could lead to a problem for the county and a problem perhaps for us, although we're somewhat protected.
I actually think that this might belong in its own separate section. Perhaps it's titled Q and we add, you know, R to it for something else. Exactly, a conflict of interest. It seems to me that it is appropriate to have its own title as conflict of interest because it has, you know, it has information that I think is relevant to what we're discussing. The question's been asked earlier in our discussion about, well, what is a conflict of interest? It's not defined. I'd like to make a motion to amend the motion to amend. And it's to add a title, conflict of interest, and have this being its own subsection. It seems to make more sense that we would put this one in as Q before the voting information.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
So I believe, according to the rules, I guess these don't govern us yet, but I don't think we can amend the motion again, right? Because we've amended it twice now. Anyway. So we have a motion and we have a second. Discussion regarding making this its own section. We're going to call it conflict of interest. Is that what we're going to call it?
Yes.
And we're proposing to insert this just as it's written there.
Yes.
Okay.
But discussion-wise.
Yes.
Then we need to go back to Q or R, whichever, and remove the voting by the majority of the members to.
Right, but we have to deal with this item and trickle down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just trying to keep everything.
Now, I guess one thing with this, we've had more of an informal process in that I know that I stated with some of the items regarding the comp plan. Site specifics that, you know, I've worked with this person, not on this project, and no one spoke up, so I continue to participate in the process. I guess I'm not sure I like the verbiage here. Recusal from deliberation and voting is required if such involvement might affect judgment in reaching decision. I don't want to get too complicated, but it seems like we should have who's making those determinations, I guess is my point. If it's so strong that someone should step down, that's fine. But it seems like we should probably, once again, take it to a vote of the commission or the board to say, look, you know, do we think it is a conflict or not?
But we just had a lesson on this, that you can state that you think there might be a conflict here, and if no one objects to it,
you're right.
You can
right,
vote.
But I guess
so.
If,
it doesn't.
One person objects. Does that mean then you need to step down?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I guess I just want to make sure it's understood. Right. This was it's really not.
So I what bothers me a little bit is that we have to have a majority of the voting members say, yeah, you can have an excuse. When it, by the lesson we just got, it's not our decision. It's between the person that states his conflict. And if no one objects to it, then he can go ahead and vote on the issue.
So we have 9 people here. One person says yes. That's a done deal.
Yeah. It's politics.
And actually, it may even go further than that, but I'll hold that.
This is just the first one. Can we table this particular one, ask staff to rewrite it as far as what we've heard to this point, and come back at our next meeting to put that? I realize it will delay adoption of the rules, but I mean, we can go all night.
Well, I don't think we're that far. We're just asking questions. I think we all agree we need to have a conflict of interest.
This is the first one. We have a whole bunch that we want to talk about.
But I guess the conflict of interest, I think, is probably the main one. But
For me, the balance of the issues are less tricky.
Yeah.
Unless there are other issues out there that we haven't talked about.
Well, I would wait to see.
Yeah, okay.
So if we... Yeah. Can I propose that we table this amendment to the amendment, those two temporarily, see if there's anything else going on with this? We may be able to say yeah, and then we can come back to it and resolve it.
I guess point of order, a table, is that something needs a second, or does that just immediately happen?
No. Needs a second.
That's a motion. There's one other approach to this, and that's just eliminate Q.
Well, I guess, so are you making an official motion to table this?
I did.
Okay, is there a second? Okay. No second, so we're still discussing.
Okay. And back to the motion to create a conflict of interest section. I'm fine with that. I mean, my parenthetical statement there is just a suggestion. I don't really care where it goes.
Well, if there's no further discussion, we can vote on the proposed motion amendment to the amendment to the original motion.
So we would, just to be clear, because I'm trying to follow kind of where we were going. So this would become the new Q, and the language currently existing in Q would not be there, at least for now. Is that everybody's understanding? It wouldn't become a giant two-paragraph Q. It would be its own section.
I thought it was its own section.
Its own section, Q.
Q is still there.
Yeah, Q is still there. We haven't got rid of it. I don't believe you proposed the removal and deletion of Q, so this would be a new section, and Q would still be in place. Correct?
So correct. I mean, ultimately, my goal would be to have an R that's going to address what currently is in Q. Are we following? This process is a little bit convoluted, but all right.
Okay.
All right.
No further discussion?
I'd just be curious to know anyone else's opinion on whether the word required should be recommended or whether the word might should be could. Robert, you said you didn't want to get in on the weeds on this, but at the end of the day, you know, if I want to vote on something, I would do this on my own, okay? But I guess at the end of the day, required And with a 1 out of 9 vote, I don't know. That feels weird to me.
But where's...
I would rather see somebody vote on something that turned out to be a conflict of interest and the commissioner removes them from their seat than to just say, hey, if someone raises their hand and said, Aaron, you're an architect, or Robert, you're a developer or builder or whatever, and I'm going to guess that you've met this guy for dinner once in the last decade. I'd like you to get out. Is that enough?
No. I think you're misunderstanding. You have to state that you have a conflict of interest. I don't, if we're on deliberation and all that, we've already had public hearings.
Okay.
So I don't think it is a case of somebody saying you have a conflict of interest. It's
no, I see
you
that,
stating
okay.
it yourself.
Okay. Got it.
There was some discussion before about if it's voted on. I guess when I read this, I don't see that other members are voting on it. It's more of a self-check.
Yes.
You're choosing to recuse yourself
right.
from voting.
Well, and just a little clarification there. You are offering to recuse yourself because of a conflict of interest. If no one objects to your conflict of interest, then you can still vote.
But that's not what that says.
No.
Yeah,
no.
That's
right. Hence the required, not
right.
recommended.
So recusal from deliberation and voting is required if such involvement might affect judgment in reaching the decision. I see that as, when I read that, I interpret it as a self-check. Not everybody else doing a check on me or agreeing or disagreeing with me, but me saying, I believe I have a conflict, I am recusing myself,
okay.
and nobody else is weighing in on that decision.
Which, like I said, I would do anyway, so as written and understood, if everyone understands it that way, I'm good.
Looking at it again, I think you've got a great point. You talk about an opening to overturn whatever we do. This is it. You know, I openly say I've got a conflict of interest. I once met Mr. Smith about this property 5 years ago. So I've disclosed it. I don't think that that's going to affect my deliberation, but somebody else could second guess me. You're required to recuse yourself in that situation. I think, reflecting, I think you're better saying recusal from deliberation and voting is permitted. I'm just trying to get past Q.
Right.
We're working on.
And I guess, you know, we really haven't had this problem because actually we have a good board. But even to say I might have a conflict of interest, someone could say, well, gee, if you're just bringing that up, then you know what? That may affect your judgment.
Right.
You know,
well,
it just seems too wishy-washy. I guess then all of a sudden then someone at the other end goes, you're out of here. You can't.
So you would like to see it permitted, to say permitted.
Right. That's why I'm uncomfortable voting. We're out of amendments. I'm going to have to vote against this amendment.
The way it's written.
The
so we have too many amendments to amend a word in there.
I guess you probably have the ability to vote.
Well,
I think Tom can amend his. Tom can amend
right. Well,
or no,
but the amendment to the amendment can be withdrawn. Tom can rework his wording and then make that proposal if that's agreeable. As I understand it, you can make a motion to withdraw your amendment. And then Tom can withdraw his and we can do a write and then propose it.
I think the cleanest thing is if we don't agree with this particular motion, we voted down,
yeah.
and
right.
then
yep.
we go from Whichever. There.
Right.
And one point about all this.
I have to say, first of all, I think I have a conflict of interest.
One point about this. This is the rules that govern us. If we violate this, somebody does have a complaint to make about us. So, yes, we've been very good, and we've been very cordial and done all this, but
who knows if the next
right.
board will be that way. Okay, so shall we vote?
Sure.
All those in favor of the amendment to the amendment to the original motion, raise your hand.
As stated on the screen.
As stated.
All those opposed?
My favorite when the guy that wrote it raises his hand.
Well, actually, this is part of the process, and these, like I said before, these are our rules, and it's not my rules, okay? So if you're going to make a product, yeah, have to have a good process, and let's work on it. Now, I'd be open to having someone else take a stab at what this conflict of interest statement's going to look like.
Well, I think we will. That's why I started this conversation with Scott. Hey, Scott, do 90% of the Planning Commission's documents look like this, and is it based in solid RCWs that hold up in court? Before I consider, Tom sent an email.
Yeah, and I think the answer is yes, and I think our earlier rules may have had a conflict of interest provision in it as well.
Well,
it's certainly not unusual.
Does someone want to take a shot at recrafting this?
So do we have any amendments pending?
Well, yeah, actually, we have Tom's original amendment,
which was to just have this in addition to Q. This is actually a second paragraph in a part of Q.
Okay.
The amendment we just voted down was to put in a conflict of interest
okay.
as a separate
to
paragraph.
To help us get out of this circle,
yes.
Can I call for a vote so that we can either vote up or down on that?
Yeah, you can call for the vote. So, all right, so now we're back to Tom's original amendment, which is the text in front of us, but this would actually be in addition to or just another paragraph that is a part of Q, correct? Right, Tom? That's where you originally started from.
No, I thought we voted that down. Didn't we just do that?
No, we voted the amendment to the amendment, which was to have a separate section conflict of interest. But it had the same verbiage.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know.
I mean, maybe we're just doing this part, but we should, because you did make an original amendment, and then there was an amendment to your amendment. So what we need to vote on now is this item here being a part of Q as just a separate paragraph, as it's written. That's what you initially proposed.
Okay, so you're back to saying vote on this as the suggestion to be appended to Q?
Yes.
As an additional paragraph.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Now that was clarified. All those in favor? All those opposed? Okay, so it looks like Tom opposed. Excuse me, Tom was in favor, all the other ones opposed. Carrie Ann is not obligated to vote.
We're still operating under the old rules.
Lawlessness.
So, now we have the original motion on the table, which is to adopt this as presented by staff.
I have a motion.
Okay.
A motion to amend the motion on subsection Q. On page 7, I hand wrote this out. It's not very neat, but I'll try to get through it. So the subsection would just be voting, not voting obligatory, and states, every member of the commission present when a question is put to vote shall vote on the question unless that member has recused him or herself due to a conflict of interest or is allowed to abstain from voting voting on this by law or any other applicable law. If any member persists in refusing to vote for other than the reason stated, he or she shall be recorded as voting in the negative on the question before the commission. I don't know if it needs that last part, though.
Doesn't. Strike that.
I can strike.
Because you already
would not need the persistence. So it would be every member of the commission present when a question is put to vote shall vote on the question unless that member has recused him or herself due to a conflict of interest or is allowed to abstain from voting by this bylaw or any other applicable law.
You want to put it up there so you look at it?
Yes, but I could hardly read my
I will second there. That.
You will second that?
Okay, sorry. This is really taking a scratch to get that out. I'm not as prepared as Tom.
cleaned out.
Okay, so just to clarify, this replaces Q once again, or is this R? Is
it would replace. So at this point where it stands, this would replace Q because we haven't defined conflict of interest.
And it's just called voting, not voting obligatory.
Correct.
Right.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was kind of drafting it when we were changing the Q.
That's fine.
So that should say 9Q voting.
If, yes. Okay.
Right. Okay. And it's second.
Seconded.
Yep. Discussion.
Yes, discussion?
No, let's vote.
Let's vote.
All right. No further discussion. All those in favor of the amendment as proposed? Opposed? That was unanimous. Okay, unanimous. Passes. May I keep this? Okay.
Yes.
There was one more motion on the table that was not voted on.
Was there?
That was Joe's motion to table the discussion.
No, it was never seconded.
No second.
It wasn't seconded. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so now we're back to the original motion, which is to adopt the amended staff report, unless there's any other proposals for amendments.
Well, sure, why not? I'd like to have you take a look at number four. That's what I'm going to propose as my next motion here. And this one refers to Part 6, insert in Part 6, conduct of business. Second seal. I'm going to find that myself. Okay, conduct of business. It's on page 4-8. Oh, what does that mean?
4 out of 8, yep.
Okay. Oh, 4 out of 8. Okay, that good.
Says minutes.
Yep. Okay, this talks about... Okay, the motion is the finding shall not be approved the same day as the deliberation and voting without the unanimous consent of the commission.
Okay, is there a second? I'll ask one more time. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay.
The reason is a lot of times we do vote unanimously on things, which is not a problem. So you have a findings and everything goes fine. You can have the discussion and the vote and the findings on the very same day. But if there's disagreement, that doesn't allow time for the people who are in disagreement to formulate their minority report. Again, historically, this presented a problem once before where we came on it very fast, and we were not able to attach the findings, the minority report to the findings. The findings turned out to be findings that were supported by the commissioners, but were overturned or remanded by the Growth Hearings Board. That could have been handled a little bit better. As a result, you might be surprised that I was the one who was writing the minority report, and I had to run around the county to find signatures to get it together, and it was a major pain for me personally to do all that work. There were enough people who signed the minority report. It was attached and was looked at. What this motion is going to allow is a little breathing space, so there's time for people to come back together and talk about the finding.
Okay, and once again, so this is paragraph C stays in its entirety, and then this is a new paragraph.
Not entirety, just attached, I think.
Yeah, this is in addition to
another sentence, yeah.
Right, okay. I guess question for staff, other than timing, this is probably, you don't see any other.
Yeah, it's not very frequent that we have the findings even prepared the same day as the vote. There have been those instances, and usually because of some sort of deadline with the board.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So we don't see this very often, and it would be up to staff, I think, to compel the commission as to the importance of doing it same day.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I see Tom's proposal as being a safety valve to allow the minority to be heard on this. Because, yeah, we get stuff shoved down our throats and we're trying to get through it. And there are some very valid points that the minority has that I'd like to see brought to the commissioner's attention.
He meant to say we have some short time constraints that we have to comply with.
He meant to say he's been hand-fed.
No, force.
Any further discussion? All right, hearing none. All those in favor of the amendment to include item 4, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
I would like to make a quick amendment proposal on. Let me get to it.
Joe, can I make one quick,
I got the floor.
Edit note with regard to Tom's email. Recommendation item 4. In his parentheses, it says may be inserted into Roman numeral 6. I think that should actually be Roman numeral 4 with regard to where he was actually referencing the text. Because Roman numeral 4 is conduct of business, section C.
I am a certified dyslexic, so
appreciate the open awareness and knowledge.
Okay.
Thank you. Yep.
Robert's got a confused look on his face.
Conduct of business is item 6. Minority reports is item
D.
D. We need to make a. Where did you anticipate this going, Tom? I'm sorry. I think maybe.
Well, let's see. Figure this out. Where do we speak of?
Well, the minority report is D in section 6. And It looks like you did want this.
Okay.
6D? Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it probably would be D in 6.
My fault.
Yes.
Did you get that, Scott?
Are you saying add it to D or?
Just attach it to D, I think so.
Yeah. Then we would change the header to that to read minority reports and findings.
Where's our findings? I guess if that would work for you, it would work for me. It's just the concept that they need to be
kind of odd to tie the two together.
It seems like it should be tied somewhere, but with findings. That, yeah. As that reminder, if you're looking for your rules that govern your.
Staff can, you know, we understand the intent of the motion that's been approved. Staff can look at a good home for that.
All right. You know, just think perhaps conduct of business and maybe after parliamentary procedure, maybe just insert a new paragraph. It is this one maybe that says findings and then just change all the lettering after that.
Okay.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay. My amendment.
Yes.
Is on page 8 of 8, paragraph 1. At the end there, it says meetings will start on time. And I would propose that be rewritten to say meetings will start on a timely basis. Because we do have circumstances that we will delay the meetings to allow.
We've held for quorum
before. Right. Yep.
Okay, at the end of paragraph 1.
Right.
Well, so he made a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
Pretty simple.
Okay, hearing no discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? We should start on time. Okay. Let's see. So we're back to the original motion, unless there are any proposed other amendments.
I have a question.
Okay.
On page 5 of 8, Let's see, that would be section 7, paragraph 2. It says the reconsideration must be heard and voted upon at the same meeting. And my question is, if it's a large enough question for this reconsideration, can that be tabled until the next meeting, or do we have to state that it can be extended?
I'm sorry, where were you? I didn't catch where you were.
Page 5 of 8.
Page 5 of 8.
And paragraph 2 up there, I believe it's.
Oh, okay. Yes. I was looking under
7, reconsiderations. And if a motion for reconsideration is made, it's saying that we have to reconsider it and vote on it at the same meeting.
At the next meeting.
Well, no, they're saying it. If you're asking for reconsideration, it has to take place. No, can't be delayed any more than the next meeting. And then I think this is saying the reconsideration must be heard and voted upon at the same meeting.
Right. There's kind of a conflict.
No, I don't think there is, actually. What they're saying is you can't let an item go too long. If you're going to reconsider, you have to bring it up at the next meeting.
Correct.
But at that next meeting, you have to actually vote on the reconsideration, yay or nay.
And what I'm asking is if it's critical enough to be brought up a reconsideration and there is a large enough issue, forcing that to be voted on at the same meeting may not be the best path.
Well, I guess I'm not sure if this is right out of Robert's Rules of Order. I know that the timing on the reconsideration that it has to happen at the next meeting is directly out of Robert's Rules of Order. But also, I guess, just to say, yes, we're going to reconsider, no, we're not, to me, that's a small issue until you actually get down to the issue that you're actually reconsidering. So you don't necessarily have to vote on, you have to determine whether you're going to reconsider the issue. But it doesn't say then you have to actually resolve that issue. You can continue to discuss the item that you're reconsidering.
Well,
but you just have to vote whether you are going to reconsider or not.
Okay, but then it's a reconsideration must be heard and voted upon at the same meeting.
That's just the motion is what you're saying. The vote, right. The motion for that reconsideration must be heard and voted.
Okay, then I would just propose we insert reconsideration motion must be heard and voted upon at the same meeting.
All right. Is there a second? Nope. Was that a second, Tom?
Yeah, I'll second.
Okay. So I just think he wants to clarify that the reconsideration is the motion for reconsideration. That is what's going to be voted upon at the same meeting as the reconsideration being brought up. So I don't think it really matters. I think it's just, he's trying to be clarified a little bit. I think he just wants to add, we're talking the last sentence, right?
Right.
And it's timely, the reconsideration or the motion.
The reconsideration motion.
Must be heard and
just
voted
adding
on.
The word
okay.
Motion. After the word reconsideration.
Did you get that? Okay. Let's see. I guess we're voting on that. Any more discussion on that? No more discussion. All those in favor? Seems like it's unanimous. Okay. Back to the original motion, unless there's another amendment being proposed. Hearing none. I'm just kidding.
I will acquiesce and hold off. I would like to have a little discussion at the end of this process to talk about minutes and the recent past history, and that's all. I'll let it go for that.
Okay.
One more point. On page 3 of 8, section 4D, have we ever created an annual report?
Yes. Have we ever created one? Yes. Did we do one last year? I'm not sure if one was done last year. But we've done them more often than not since the code was changed in 2009-ish and required that annual report.
I'm glad that you bring this up. I would like to make a motion
that we actually indicate that the annual report has to be completed by the vice chair. So if I could get a second on that.
Second.
Okay. Anyway, I'll withdraw my motion.
The staff will do the report.
Yeah. You know, I do have a question. So, the clerk, are you the secretary as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess I was just trying to clarify. I was assuming as much, but I wasn't sure. Okay.
But, okay. We have minutes of all of our meetings.
Yes.
We present all the fact finding of facts. What is in the annual report that isn't covered by all of those documents?
So the annual report in the past anyways, and we're given latitude to think about what that should include, but in the past anyways, it's been sort of a summation of the year in review, really. So it's been included for the joint meeting with the Board of County Commissioners.
So it's just basically a summary of the highlights.
Yes. Yeah. Sort of a year in review, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah.
That it was just a question. No motion.
Well, I think in the past, too, I know when Linda Perales was chair, she actually wrote a summary of things she thought worked well. I think we did Committee of the Whole for the first time and kind of what worked, what didn't with some of the processes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think yeah, there was some things that particular year we had some issues with, I think, gun.
Pet meetings?
Yeah. Guns at meetings and gun clubs and espresso stands and some real interesting things that came up.
Mm-hmm. It was worth highlighting.
Yeah, it was actually quite an entertaining report. Mm-hmm. So I expect...
A report? Okay. It might be verbal. Okay, so we're going to vote on the original motion to accept the amended staff report
as amended.
As presented. By staff. We've already voted on all the amendments.
Well, so you now say back as amended.
As amended. Okay. All those in favor? And unanimous. Okay.
And,
yeah.
Chair, if I may.
Okay, yes, please.
I don't know if you all remember the November 15th meeting. I was not in attendance, so I had the pleasure of listening to the November 15th meeting in case I ever had to vote on the minutes of that meeting. And if you don't remember it, you probably fell asleep, because what you did was you started voting on acceptance of the minutes for several meetings, and those meetings went back a long time. Now, there were some conditions that were available then that we hope never to go through again, which are staffing problems and all kinds of shortages around here for getting things done. But those minutes were a collection of minutes from May, somewhere in May, and every month thereafter.
Yeah. Lots of four meetings.
Oh, more than four. You probably fell asleep, Bert. Okay, well, I'll let you have the pleasure of listening to it, but I think there were at least six or seven or eight. In any case, our minutes are rather brief as they are. So okay, I'm okay with that. And I'm real pleased that the minutes are coming out and being posted so that we can see them within my impacted memory capacity. And I would hope that it would continue, but we seem to have gotten into a situation. Maybe Scott can speak to it as to why we had so many minutes left behind. And for instance, another one, we have never really approved the minutes of November 15th. So that's just a point of comment.
So I think there was a lot going on with the secretary and clerk for the Planning Commission at the time. I think we were also pretty short with staff, particularly the administrative support staff. We were we had lost a fair amount of people. And so she was actually pulling triple duty. She was also the clerk to the hearing examiner. And so I think the sheer volume of the meetings, the number of meetings, and the length of those meetings overwhelmed her. And so that quite often, you know, the best response to that is to try and have that person go home and just work on that. Well, that simply wasn't an option at the time because of all the other standing duties that she normally had, as well as additional duties that couldn't be pushed away. We hope not to have that kind of experience again in DCD, and we don't see that occurring.
Well, I'm just, as I listened to that meeting, I was just sure that it was pointless to bother with approving minutes that no one could remember and that were very sketchy to begin with. Hmm. So it's just a point. If you come up with a place where we're going to miss approving the minutes for the previous meeting, my preference would be to just not even do it.
Well, and recall that the audio stands in for minutes whenever right. there's not a written record.
Yeah.
And as I remember, the majority of those meetings, we did not answer, we did not have the question of approval of the minutes for the last meeting. They were skipped over. So there was a bit of on the commission side of not asking where those minutes were that allowed those to pile up.
Yeah, that's I recall that as well. Yeah.
So should we move no minutes left behind? Should that
no
be
minutes
our...
left behind.
Okay.
Okay, so we move on to the next item. Critical areas ordinance.
The easy stuff now, huh?
Yeah.
It's all relative.
Yeah. So, it's only that long. So, Jim Bolger, Department of Community Development. How late would you like to stay tonight? I'm prepared to go through and give a brief introduction on the process from here on out. I know at the last work study, you did get kind of a summary of some of the changes. I can do that again if you'd like, but I was really just going to be pointing out some of the schedules and materials that were released last week for public review and talk about the process again from here on out. So I can start with that, and then if people want to have me go into some of the changes, I'm happy to stick around and summarize those as well.
Okay. No, I think that sounds good. And then, as you indicated, the procedure and their timing.
Okay.
So that we know what I guess when we have to be through these. And
okay. So as most of you should be aware by now, the department released the public review draft of the critical area ordinance. You've seen some of this information before in terms of why we're conducting this update right now. It's one of the periodic updates that's driven by the Growth Management Act and is one of the associated development regulations with the comprehensive plan. Last major update was in 2005, and as statute lays out, we're to review and revise as necessary to comply with updates since the last update. And I would say that really that's kind of the basis for a lot of the changes that you'll see in this current draft that's out before the public. It's the information that's changed since 2005 in terms of best available science. It's some of the legislative changes that have taken place with the revised code of Washington, as well as the Washington Administrative Code. There have been some case laws and hearings board decisions since then. And then we also took the opportunity to do some housekeeping to make sure that we're consistent across code and then also within code. And we were able to take into consideration some of the work that has taken place since 2005 in terms of implementing the code and things that could be smoothed over based on the practitioners within the department who use this on a daily basis. I will give you some information on February 22nd. We did go to the department, to the Board of County Commissioners in one of their briefings, and we did provide them with a couple of alternative schedules for moving forward. We have a deadline for adoption of June 30th, 2017. That is taking advantage of a one-year grace period that's provided in the RCWs. So we exercised that one-year grace period, but as Scott was referencing before, staff turnover and those kinds of things, the schedule slipped quite a bit. We offered the board an alternative that actually extended the public comment and review period by a couple of weeks. It would have pushed us out past that June 30th deadline, which would have put us out of compliance with the Growth Management Act, and the county would have faced some potential liability there in terms of being able to receive some state funding, like Centennial Clean Water Fund, Public Works Trust Account, and some others. So what the board guided the department or gave direction to the department to do at that February 22nd briefing was to pursue a schedule that had a June 30th adoption date, but that they would reconsider whether they wanted to change that schedule and extend it to allow more public comment and participation at the end of March, which is the current scheduled termination of the public comment period, at least for this initial review. They'll certainly have opportunities for comment and review during the the Planning Commission consideration of this as well as the board. So come March 31st, or actually we have some time with the board on April 2nd, they'll make a determination as to whether they want to keep the public comment period open, and we have a contingent schedule for that. So that's just something to be aware of as we move forward. So what I'm going to present today is a schedule for the June 30th adoption date.
And that's coming up? You just said, so at the end of March?
Is when the public comment period will close on the draft that hit the street last Wednesday. Okay. So we've got 30-day public comment instead of 45. Also, something you're familiar with is that we've got, these are the sections in the critical area ordinance that have been revised. And are available for review, both in terms of the entire document or can be looked at in terms of individual sections, the way it's broken out. And I'll talk and demonstrate that more in a little bit. Here is the current schedule, and this is available on our website. As I say, it's subject to change based on the board's consideration. We're also adding a lot of public engagement opportunities to this. So the public comment period, as it's currently scheduled, is for the month of March. Then what we'll do is the department will take in and evaluate and consider the comments that are received prior to entering into the Planning Commission process. We are seriously considering looking at the public comments that we get and making revisions to that public draft and coming forward with a Planning Commission draft. The board, in order to kind of expedite this process, suggested we just stick with a single draft and just kind of note comments as we go. But I think that that sometimes, in my experience, can get a little confusing in terms of, you know, if we get good ideas during the public comment period and staff thinks that, hey, those are great ideas, we should probably incorporate those as we go into the Planning Commission. So we'll take that time after the public comment period closes and our first Planning Commission interactions and probably craft a new version that'll come out 2 weeks before your first hearing. Yeah.
So just curious, typically staff prepares a matrix, in essence, lists all the comments.
We'll do that.
So you'll list all the comments, the items that staff thinks are worthwhile when received, those will be incorporated in the document, but you'll look to the matrix to see all the comments. Just
right.
Okay.
So there may be some in there that staff, you know, says, you know, noted. and then there may be others that say, hey, if you change the sentence in this one section, it'll become much clearer and we'll make those textual changes as well. There may be substantive changes that the department can support and we would include those in those drafts as well. So that's the intent right now.
Is there a reason we do not have a hearing in Silverdale?
Part of it had to do with timing, so that what we've done in preparation for this quick schedule is really try to look at when we had regular meetings, where we need special meetings, and there was no specific request for Silverdale. That doesn't mean we can't change it to Silverdale at some point. We've had past critical area ordinance hearings in Silverdale just because of the capacity that was necessary at the fairgrounds. But at this point, we just
haven't blocked out a time and a location the way we have with these particular dates. So one of the things we did was we tried to identify your availability, and then with the understanding that it's unlikely you'll get through a hearing in a single session. And so if you wanted to continue that hearing, we wanted to provide kind of a location and a time certain where that hearing could be continued. So that's really the purpose of those multiple hearings that you see established by for the Planning Commission and the Board in this schedule. If you would like us to consider a Planning Commission hearing in Silverdale, we can certainly accommodate that. If it's adding another hearing date, you may not need a third hearing date, or you may...
The past, it's been typical that we do a hearing in Paulsbow, a hearing in Silverdale, and a hearing in Port Orchard, since there's essentially three districts mm-hmm. for the county.
Right.
And being in the central district, it's kind of, I don't see it.
Well, part of it is the timing.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
So just out of curiosity, obviously you have 5-2, the Planning Commission hearing at Port Orchard, then you have 6-6, findings and facts. So that's obviously over a month. I'm not sure what's scheduled for the 16th of May. But
I have a more full-blown schedule that I can look at in a minute, and we can talk more.
I guess we should at least entertain that. I certainly understand your position.
Sure.
Maybe we should at least entertain that, see if that's an option.
Yeah. Okay. Following the commission, it goes to the board for their hearings and deliberations and ultimate adoption, and then following the approximate 6/28 or June 28th, adoption date, there's a 60-day appeal period, where if we really do this well, nobody's going to appeal the critical barrier.
Okay. Karen? I had a question.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to, okay, so there's a draft that's out for public comment, and that ends on what day?
On the 31st of March.
And then you're going to do a Planning Commission draft that'll incorporate comments, and how many days is that out for public review?
That'll be out 2 weeks prior to the first hearing that you have.
Okay. So then that could generate more comments that'll be attached. Okay.
Yes. So you'll see all the public comments okay. that come in, and we'll note those that resulted in changes in the Planning Commission draft from the public draft. So one of the things that we've been doing in terms of getting the word out is providing a lot of the information on the county's new website. I'm sure you've all been to the new website. It's mm-hmm. slick. It's clean. It's different.
It does have one technical error.
Where you get the old website that pops
no.
up first?
Oh, what's that? If you don't have the website in the full page view, you cannot reach the pull downs.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Little technical problem.
Thanks. Can you make sure you get another
message? As long as you're on that subject, the archives for 2016 hey, are missing.
Unless it's on the agenda, covered as part of business. I know the rules of procedure. We're still working out the bugs on the new website, but one of the things that we do have is an online open house. We will have physical open houses available around the county. In fact, Kathleen Barnhart right now is at the Manchester Community Council talking to them about the critical area ordinance. We hope to have, or we will have, physical open houses between all the board and Planning Commission hearings so people can get information. But we also have this online open house that's available where people can go in and review sections and have interactive maps, and that's accessible 24/7. So we really hope to be able to push a lot of people to that online open house to get more people really looking at it, and the interactive maps are nice because people can really get down to their property much easier and see, is my property encumbered by any of the wetlands in the section. Also on the website, in addition to the online open house, we have all of the same kinds of information available. So it's just identified up here. We have the schedule, which I just showed on an earlier slide.
We have two versions, actually three versions of the document itself. We have an underlined strikeout so that people can look at changes from the existing code. We have a clean copy because not all of us read that very cleanly. And then we've also broken it out by chapters so people can look at wetlands, and then they can also look at the summary of changes that have taken place there, and they can look at the best available science that went, and the references for how the technical stakeholder groups that met last summer, how they chose to dispose of the best available science that was considered in those meetings.
Do you have a comment, Joe?
I know that if you sign up for notifications, you should be getting notifications when there's a change near you. Is that list available to put out this notice that we're going to have this online?
It should have gone out. We sent notices to everybody that is on our Gov delivery, I think is the system, that both subscribes to the department as well as to the full-blown county notification system.
Okay.
It went out in a press release. We also sent specific notices to community groups that aren't necessarily affiliated with the county, but are involved in kind of community activities, in the hopes that, and offered to come out and meet with those groups to talk to them about it. So we've tried to get the word out broadly, and we'll continue to do that.
Okay.
As I mentioned before, we do have summaries of the best available science. This is also, this is just a screenshot of the online open house that's available for people. If you look at the tabs across the window, it basically gives folks an overview to the critical area ordinance, why we're doing this, and then it really looks at each of the sections. I'm not going to take you through the whole thing here, but I'll just show you some examples of what I was mentioning before. This is basically just kind of the rationale for the update and how that's put together. This is an example of the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Area section as it's represented in the online open house. So those maps, you can zoom down to your own piece of property. One of the neat things about this, and this is kind of a new thing for the county, is that when you go from section to section, the map stays on your piece of property. So you don't have to kind of keep zeroing back in. It'll keep that scale as you go through the other interactive maps. There is one exception to the interactive maps, and that is under the geohazard area section of the document, because one of the changes that you'll see in this document is we've effectively rewritten the geohazard section. A lot of this is in response to some of the OSO sensitivity that have gone on. So now you'll really see kind of three categories of geohazards that are out there: seismic, erosion, landslide. And there's just so much, it's really hard to get all of that onto a single map and make it interactive without freezing up the whole program. So we actually broke that out into PDFs so that people can download those maps and they can blow them up to the scale of their property and have better clarity than trying to slow people down and getting through this. I should also note that on each one of these pages, people can click on, I want to leave a comment. So they don't have to go through the whole thing. They can comment anywhere as they're going through the review process.
So, question for you?
Yeah.
With the critical areas, I guess when this is said and done, you can go to the building limitation map. Is that going to have all these combined on it when after this passes? These are obviously new maps. And so I was curious.
Well, the information on the maps is coming from different sources. But yeah, those maps will be updated along with this. And so what you're seeing here is you're also looking at the maps. And so one good example is that there's some new provisions that came out in terms of state guidance, is that that jurisdictions should be looking not only at the Department of Natural Resources streams and their stream typing, which are notoriously inaccurate, and we see that a lot in this county where the stream is halfway up the slope instead of the bottom of the ravine based on the GIS maps. So we've had work done in this county by a group called the Wild Fish Conservancy, which physically walked and mapped a lot of streams and typed those. And so we have those maps are also represented, or those layers are also represented here. There's also some additional information from the University of Washington where they did some modeling. We haven't put it on these maps as building limitation, for building limitation consideration right now. because those streams aren't typed, but certainly those would be looked at when a permit came in just to see if this warrants a site visit or not, kind of a thing. So, yeah, the maps will be updated based on that new information, like the Wild Fish Conservancy as part of the building limitations. And then, again, last page of the website. So that's really all I had planned to go through. Like I say, I'm happy to go through some of the major changes with you if you would find that worthwhile at this point. We do have some work studies scheduled where we can go through that. It may, based on the fact that you had this about a month ago, where Kathleen did walk you through most of the major changes, and I think some of the materials that you got for tonight's meeting included summary of the changes. I figured you might want to look at the actual document itself before we really get into the details and talk about why this changed.
We agree. We can go into that with the work study, spend a little time digging through this with the summary they've already provided. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Is this using a new mapping program?
Yeah. It's called Story Mapping, and it's available through an Esri online program. Story Mapping, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. I've had experience in previous positions where we've done online open house and actually found that we got a lot more engagement than bringing the easels out to a community center on a dark and stormy night. And actually, it also makes handling the comments easier because they're filling out a form that is pretty standardized, and so we can get some good, consistent information from that as well.
Great.
Wanted to say that Kathleen's done a great job with all the documents and the information, and I'm just very impressed with her work.
Yeah, she has done a great job. I'll be the first to admit that, and she's done it by herself, given the staff turnover that we've had. So,
So you're going to give her a raise and a bonus?
I will do whatever is in my power to do.
And we like the hard copy. Very nice.
Okay. We gave you the underlined strikeout version, figuring that might be most relevant to your work. But again, if you want the clean version, it's up on the website.
Sure. Okay. Question. Actually, maybe Scott's not here, but I guess
I'll answer.
You know,
more.
Well,
I'm sure he'll do
well
it.
Actually, it's whatever kind of policy procedure, but also we used to always have a spot in the agenda for public comment. For items not on the agenda.
Yeah.
And I just noticed it's not there anymore. I was kind of curious if that's something that's changed or just something.
If you would like that back on your agenda, we can have that back on your agenda, but you're going to need to make a motion.
I thought Tom's emails represented the entire public commentary.
Would you like that back on the agenda to reserve some time at the beginning of your meeting, or
it's not often people take advantage of it. I was just kind of curious why it was removed.
I don't think there was a deliberate decision to move that. I think it was just an oversight.
Okay.
And sure. Between the two of us, our long-term memory goes back, 2 months? So, okay. It did used to be a standing item, I remember, when I was here previously.
So as far as upcoming Planning Commission meetings, unfortunately, March 21st, I will not be here.
I am here that day. Okay. I am not here the 15th.
Talk that man's way.
We have a special meeting, but I'm going to be in D.C. next week.
I guess anything we do need to know regarding the Joint Planning Commission meeting? Now, that's at 10:30.
I believe it's in the chambers here, if not next door. And I don't. Apparently, Dana, the commissioner's clerk, was preparing an agenda. Is that what we talked about this morning?
I know that the agenda for all board meetings it's on the Board of County Commissioners website. Just like you have a Planning Commission website, there's a board website that has the agenda on it.
So it isn't very full in terms of information about what they want to talk about at this point. I know that we have a half hour scheduled, and I don't know if you know any more, Louisa.
No, sorry, I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure, if there's some specific items we want to talk about. But I guess give that some thought.
Well, we do, you know, it's in the county code that there's an annual joint meeting with the board.
Right.
I was looking back, and historically it seemed like it had taken place kind of later in the summer. And I thought that might be a good opportunity as we go into our budget and work planning for the next calendar year, that might be a good time to get into a routine where we sit down and we can start mapping out instead of spoon feeding you or what was your reference?
Shoving it down his throat.
Right. Oh, that's right. So that might be a more opportune time in the future so that we can kind of do more collaborative planning on what the year ahead will entail.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I just Lisa? Want to respond, Chair and members of the Commission. Talking about standing item, we would like to add on the agenda administrative report that will give me the opportunity once in a while when there are some projects that are important, I can share with the Commission.
Okay.
If that's okay.
No, I think we'd like that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And as far as the joint meeting, we have a work program for the department, and we can certainly talk about that at the joint meeting, too. The board has a draft. We're still not done yet because since Jim's arrival, he discovered that we have 63 additional items or something to that effect. So we need to figure out how to categorize them, and I'm not sure we can do it before or by the meeting, but we'll do our best. If the commission is interested in it, we can use that as one of the items for discussion, because that certainly will kind of take us into the 20, well, actually it's this year's budget coming up at the end of the year for 2018.
So I don't know if it was this group or another group that I was at, but maybe you were at too. Robert, and that was, there was a question about code revisions, and the department has been kind of keeping an inventory of all the code revisions that had come in from outside parties, from internal inconsistencies that have been identified, and that's actually a substantial list of things. And so we need to sit down with you all, and as well as the rest of the major projects on that work plan, and really start prioritizing how we move through that list. So that's one of the things that we still need to figure out for the coming year.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order?
Yeah, it's just a quick thing. We've just completed our training now. Is this piece of paper a record for that y'all want the department, or is it for our glory wall?
I think we need that for our department.
You do need it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to have to take it off my – I had it framed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Got it.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
We can just take a copy of it, Tom, and we can give it back to you for framing.
I didn't get one of those today.
This came with the package that was bundled on us.